prepare for a true revolution.
Actually, you can prove God exists.
Questioning tradition, because what you've been taught isn't always true.
The truth will set you free.
Good morning, Truth Revolution. I am Dave. With me is Pastor Jeff of Revolution Church.
Thank you for listening to Truth Revolution. We are put on here by Revolution Church, so if you are interested in coming out to a church, check us out. We're at 9 o'clock and 11:15 every Sunday morning.
That's right. 1111 West South Street here in Salina.
If you're in Salina. If you're listening online or if you're not in the Salina area, you can watch us live online as well. We video broadcast right online.
Right. And Truth Revolution is, of course, where faith and reason meet. They coexist. They love each other.
Peanut butter and chocolate.
Peanut butter and chocolate.
This is where you can have your Bible and your brains at the same time.
And we've got a great show lined up for you today.
Yes, we do. We have a special guest. We also are going to be doing a Bible contradiction, as usual. We have a listener question that we're going to try to get to, depending on the time. Today's special guest is Tom Gilson.
Tom Gilson is the National Field Director for Horatio Christi Student Apologetics Alliance. He is the monthly Worldview and You columnist at Breakpoint and has written articles for Discipleship Journal, Touchstone Magazine, and Salvo, and he also blogs at Thinking Christian.
ThinkingChristian.com is his site. Now, Tom, you're going to have to chime in here. Every now and then we do a Bible contradiction, and we get the Bible contradiction sometimes from
TheThinkingAtheist.com.
Was it your website in response to that?
No, actually, it's thinkingchristian.net, by the way.
Okay, .net.
And I had that name for it long before I heard about the Thinking Atheist.
Right on.
Well, we just thought that was pretty interesting that we always laugh.
Sure.
The Thinking Atheist.
Yeah.
All right. Good. Well, hey, we are glad to have you with us today. And of course, you are one of the editors of the book True Reason, Confronting the Irrationality of the New Atheism. And this book looks phenomenal. When I first started reading it and reading the reviews, I just thought, oh my goodness, I got to get a hold of this.
Mm-hmm.
The authors include William Lane Craig, who blows our mind on a consistent basis, Sean McDowell, and he's amazing. How did you get involved in this book?
You know, that's a really quite an interesting story, because back in March of 2012, there was a Reason rally that was headlined by Richard Dawkins and a whole bunch of other top atheist leaders, and they called it the Reason rally. I knew it was coming months before that, and it bothered me in a way that maybe other people wouldn't be aware of, but I have done a lot of debate, a lot of reading, a whole lot of study of new atheists, and what I had observed and what was bothering me in the months leading up to this, as I was aware of this Reason rally, was that they like to proclaim themselves the party of reason. They have the Richard Dawkins Foundation for Reason and Science, and Sam Harris has his Project Reason, but what they aren't very good at is reasoning.
Right.
And that's an introductory statement we'll have to come back to, but I'm telling a story now. So I'll skip over that for a little bit.
We
I was laying awake early in the morning, 3 a.m. on, of all days, Christmas Eve, the 3 months just before the Reason rally, thinking, why are we letting them get away with this? Somebody ought to write a book, but it's only 3 months. Nobody. And then I realized I had friends who could write and that we could get an e-book done in no time at all. And 80 days later, it was the top-selling book on Amazon.com in the atheism category.
That's awesome.
That's a fast turnaround.
It was amazing what God did to bring the authors who joined in with us, and Carson Whitenauer, my co-editor, were really energized by this idea of just saying, hey, this whole claim of reason on the atheist part needs to be challenged, and we need to show them that Christianity, and that's part of the point of the book too, the second half of the book really, is that Christianity is the place to find true reason. But the energy was great. People worked fast. We got the book done. It was only an ebook, but then Kregel Publications, sometime later, they got in touch with me and said, if you'd like to put it in print, we'd like to help. And so the print version came out just about a month ago, finally.
Awesome. Wow, and it looks amazing. I'm actually going to throw some questions at you because there was a blogger on Patheos, an atheist blogger, who posted an excerpt of the book, and basically this book was just maligned. I mean, it was attacked. shocked.
Mm-hmm. It was.
And yes. So you had a really gracious response. I just kind of want to go through that because you had some really amazing things to say. But before we even get into that, why don't you explain for the listeners, what is new atheism and how is it different from old atheism? I mean, is it just the atheists who are less than 30 years old?
No, that's a good question. And that was one of the questions that was raised on that Pathos discussion thread. Yeah. New atheism is a term that was coined not by some Christian, but it was coined on Wired magazine by Gary Wolf, if I remember right. And he was using it to describe the people who are basically following in under the leadership of Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris, Christopher Hitchens, and Daniel Dennett. They've had the name of the four horsemen. Christopher Hitchens has passed away now. The four horsemen of the new atheism. What differentiates this strain, this school of atheism from, you know, just plain atheism, is that they are they're on a crusade. Not just they're not just against God. They are militantly opposed to religion.
Yes, they want to
They want to bring it to an end. Yes,
that's right. And so it's not simply enough for them to say there is no God, I don't believe in God, but they want to show everybody else what fools we've been for believing in such a God.
So I guess people could call them actually fundamental atheists.
Fundamentalist atheists?
Yeah, because I mean, you say all the really extreme people in each of the on every side are fundamentalists.
Yeah.
You know, but they're extreme atheists.
That's right.
And they've been called that and they don't like it.
I'm sure they don't like it. I mean, you have on the forum, you know, on the forum, someone said, what is new atheism? Well, it's mostly another stink label assigned by Christians.
What?
That's what they said.
Except it wasn't a Christian who first coined it.
It was Gary Wolf in Wired magazine, as you pointed out. So that's interesting. Now, in this book, you're pointing out some of the problems with that new atheism and some of the good things about Christianity. And someone on that forum says, how does one justify the claim that science and Christianity are compatible when so many Bible stories have been shown by science to be false or impossible? Now, we love those questions, but your response, I thought your response was great.
Well, and this more or less illustrates the problem that we were identifying under the heading of irrationality of the new atheism, which is they claim to be the people who depend for evidence on for every conclusion they draw. All knowledge comes from evidence.
Because they are reasonable.
But that's a pretty much evidence-free statement. Or it's a poorly thought through thing. There are a few points where some Christians disagree with the findings of mainstream science, of course, and obviously when it comes to young earth creationism. However, the history of science is rooted in Christianity. And science today, there's no contradiction between a belief in a God of truth and of order and of law. There's no contradiction between that and science. That's probably not what I put online. I don't remember what I wrote, but that's what I'm thinking off the top of my head at this point.
You're definitely right. I mean, and as you point out here later in this article, that so many of these scientists, from Copernicus to Galileo, Newton, Kepler, these people all believed that the universe was the product of a mind. And so they thought it was rational to understand how the world worked because of their belief.
They went about doing science in the name of God, basically, in the name of Christianity.
Right. Atheists will say, well, you don't have to be a Christian to do science, which is absolutely true today. There's a plurality of atheists in top science right now. But people do science today because we know that there is something to be gained from the enterprise. Mm-hmm. We know that science is good. People who did science back in the 12th century, and yes, there were people doing science in the 12th century and on up through the what was really called the scientific revolution, but people in those centuries in there where there was proto-science and it developed into real science, they didn't have centuries of history telling them that it's worth spending your time in a lab.
So why did they do it?
They went to doing it because they saw that they knew that God had revealed himself through creation, and this was worth studying because it was a way to know God better.
Hmm. Now, that is a huge distinction. I mean, did you guys hear this? That 1,000 years ago, they weren't doing science because they didn't know that if we invested more money into this, we would have better, whatever, horses or better camels or better carriages.
Yeah, they're not looking at bettering the lifestyle or the quality of life. They're looking at gaining knowledge.
Yes, they weren't looking at if we invest, we're going to cure diseases. They studied because they wanted to understand the mind of God and how the world worked.
But even that is a specifically Christian pursuit. Plato, surprisingly enough, and even some of the early Greek physicians weren't all that interested in finding ways to help people who were sick. Plato has a really kind of unpleasant passage where he says, basically, if someone's sick, it's a bad idea to waste your time on them. And then the Hindu idea of karma, you know, is not the kind of thing that leads you to want to improve people's lives. And even in that, Christianity as a motivating force for technology was unique among major world philosophies.
Now, can you explain that? What do you mean by that?
Well, Christianity is about helping people, you know, loving people. It's about the importance of the individual. It's about being created in the image of God. Right. And of course, it's about, I mean, it's more than that too. We've got the whole picture of salvation in there too.
Yeah.
But at the center of Christianity, there is God who created us in his image and gave us worth. In Plato, you didn't have that sense of worth. Aristotle, too, basically said that to be a slave was to be in whatever, you know, to be in the position in life that you deserved. Yep. Plato, as I already said, didn't have much regard for helping sick people. Hinduism is, again, not the kind of thing that's focused on the worth of people. They weren't all that interested in helping people live better lives.
Very good. And, of course, one of these atheists online responds. And again, we're talking to Tom Gilson about his new book that he's edited called True Reason, Confronting the Irrationality of New Atheism. But one of the people responded to you and they said, oh, if Christianity was so important to the development of science, what took it so long to make any meaningful advancements? And you said something on here that I loved. I absolutely loved it. You talked about the rate of growth. Do you remember writing about this?
Yeah, that if suppose science was advancing at 1% per year or 2% per year, and the in the first year, if you began at some arbitrary index number of 100, the first year you go to 102.
Yeah.
After 1,000 years, instead of growing by 2, you grow by 8 billion. And that's still a 2% growth rate.
So the growth rate hasn't changed, but you've accumulated so much knowledge that it just it's the same thing as investing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You invest just a little bit every month, and eventually your investment is going to grow so much faster after the years go by. And that's the state we're in now with science. It is expanding exponentially, but it doesn't necessarily mean the growth rate is any greater than it was 1,000 years ago.
Right, and we can't prove this numerically, but it's at least plausible.
It is plausible.
To think of it that way.
And it gives a good reason why science in the Middle Ages may not have progressed as quickly as we think it should have. Because I've seen these graphs online where, you know, they show if Christianity hadn't been so stupid and dark, you know, we would have been far advanced by now. But that's just not the case. And we're going to come back on the other side of this break. And Tom here is going to give us an answer about all the scientists, why Christianity persecuted so many scientists. Mm-hmm. He's going to talk about that for a minute. And it's a perfect answer. And so, at least I'm predicting what he's going to say because he wrote it once. So, all right. We're also going to hit our Bible contradiction and listener question, maybe. I don't know. We're having a good time.
Right.
I don't know. But do send in your questions. We're going to try to get to them next week. Since we don't have a guest speaker next week, it's just going to be all for you guys.
Head on over to truthrevolution.tv.
And we're going to link at truthrevolution.tv to Tom's website.
There you go.
Thinkingchristian.net. And so get over there, truthrevolution.tv. Check it out. Also, get on Amazon. Check out the book that we've been talking about today. It's great stuff. All right. Catch you on the other side of the break. Once again, truthrevolution.tv.
Hey, this is Pastor Jeff from Revolution Church.
And I'm Dave. We've been growing and now we're going to two services.
Sunday morning at 9 a.m. or 11:15 a.m. Check us out at salinarevolution.com.
What if someone had never been to church before?
Well, most people here hadn't been for a long, long time, if ever, so don't worry, you'll fit in fine.
What to wear? Just be yourself. Jeans, t-shirt, tats, whatever.
Revolution Church, Sunday morning, 9 or 11:15 a.m.
salinarevolution.com or check us out on Facebook.
Revolution!
Hi, this is Pastor Jeff from Revolution Church. Not only am I the host of the Truth Revolution radio program, but I'm also a foster parent. Did you know that there are only 20 or 30 children in Salina that need to be adopted right now? Did you know that there are children in foster care who want to live in Salina, but are sometimes placed in other towns because we don't have enough foster homes here? I want to challenge you to consider foster care today. If you're interested in doing foster care, go to kfapa.com, that's K-F-A-P-A, as in the Kansas Foster and Adoptive Parent Association.com, K-F-A-P-A.com, and get more information. You can request information, email and ask any questions you want, or possibly even sign up to take a class about foster parenting. It's easier and more difficult than you'd ever imagine, but it's also more rewarding than you'd ever imagine. Consider fostering and helping a child in need today.
Truth Shots from TruthRevolution.tv and Revolution Church. Here's your host, Dave, and Pastor Jeff.
Do science and religion conflict?
One author has seen four possibilities. They either conflict and are incompatible, or they're independent and just work in their own areas.
Or they dialogue, that is, they share information, or they integrate, meaning it's possible for them to work with each other regularly.
We prefer the dialogue or integration viewpoints. We believe that science is an attempt to find the truth.
And so is Christianity.
Both science and Christianity can contribute to the development of inclusive of metaphysics.
For instance, the teleological argument infers the existence of a creator from our understanding of the natural world.
On the flip side, understanding the mind of God gives us insight into the world and belief that there is order and logic behind how things work.
Similar to how early scientists like Newton, Kepler, and Copernicus viewed things.
For Christians, it should just make sense that studying the world around us should fit with studying the one who created it.
Amen.
TruthRevolution.tv.
Did you know that Truth Revolution is supported by Revolution Church and listeners like you?
It takes quite a bit of time and money to produce a quality radio show.
If you find Truth Revolution helpful, a donation would be a powerful way to make sure the message keeps going out.
This ministry is doing more than Dave and I imagined it would at the beginning.
You got that right.
And as we grow, we want to keep the goal the same. To be the place where faith and reason meet.
Donations are accepted at www.truthrevolution.tv or Revolution Church.
Truth Revolution.
And we're back.
All right, truthrevolution.tv. We are on right now with Tom Gilson from Ratio Christi, and he has got his website, thinkingchristian.net. He's just finished a book, True Reason, Confronting the Irrationality of the New Atheism. We're going to link to all of those things on our website.
Boy, that's a lot of work to do, man.
Well, it's your job, so I don't really care. We're going to link to Tom's site. We're going to link to Ratio Christi. We're going to link to the book on Amazon.
Well, we're just going to be a link monster.
That's right. So, and actually, Tom, does it matter if they buy it on Amazon or your website? Is it better for you if they get it on your website?
No, it goes to Amazon either way.
Okay, so just get on over to Amazon, but you can get there through truthrevolution.tv, mm-hmm. In case you can't remember the name of the book for some reason. So, all right, now, I promise I would ask this question, because a lot of people seem to be asking this on the forum, people sending this question to me all the time. Okay. If Christianity is so pro-science, why have we persecuted so many scientists?
Well, I had this conversation with a Christian friend of mine who said, you know, you've got to admit the church did make some mistakes in the Middle Ages, like Galileo.
Oh, Galileo.
Galileo. And I said to him, well, you know, the Galileo story isn't really all that it's cracked up to be, because it had a lot more to do probably with politics than it did with science. But set that aside. Okay, let's just, you know, let's grant Galileo. Name the other example.
Okay.
Crickets?
there isn't one.
So we've got...
Some people will say Giordano Bruno, who was burned at the stake for heresy, but it wasn't scientific heresy. It was wrong, it was bad, but it was not...
It wasn't science.
Yeah, it was something else. And sure, they made mistakes. But it wasn't anti-science.
And so Christianity doesn't actually look very anti-science when you look at the... Oh, here's the word.
Oh, no. Don't say that word.
The facts.
Facts.
The evidence.
The evidence. Oh, dun, dun, dun. And see...
we can't have evidence.
We told you guys, this is where faith and reason meets. I mean, we got the deal here. Christians have actually helped benefit science. You know, I always like to bring up the point that Galileo wasn't really teaching much more than Copernicus had already taught, and the church encouraged Copernicus to publish his book.
And the most opposition to Copernicus, well, he didn't run into it because he delayed publication. What he was afraid of was opposition from scientists, not from the church.
That's right, because he was putting out a new idea that other scientists would say, whoa, this is vastly different. This heliocentric model, I mean, this is, you're getting crazy here, Copernicus.
Right.
But yeah, that's good stuff. So, all right, another quote here that someone said, the scientist who were named in the book, you were involved in, the scientists who were named in the book all lived in a culture in which belief in a God was quite normal. They were part of a cultural groupthink. Now, how would you respond to that? Because maybe these guys, you know, just believed in God because everybody believed in God back then.
Well, first of all, suppose that were true. That would say nothing to contradict the thesis that Christian groupthink was good for science. Now, that's if it were true.
Oh.
But science is a creative activity, and these were creative people, and creativity and groupthink don't go together. I think they made up the groupthink idea because in order to make their point that Christianity was against science, or to make their point that people had to be Christians in order to do anything. But if that were the case, then creativity would have been stifled.
Mm.
Not only that, but if you look at the history of Christianity all through in every age, groupthink has not been the case. There has been all kinds of disagreement, dissent. Let's hammer this out. Let's fight over this. We don't all agree. And Christianity is not about thinking what you're taught to think.
Right. That's why there's so many different denominations. I mean, if we all thought alike, we would all still be part of just one big centrally located church.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's right.
Good. All right. We are going to go ahead and jump in and get a Bible contradiction done here.
Bible contradiction.
All right, Bible contradiction today brought to you by infidels.org.
Oh, the infidels.
The infidels.
We love you, infidels.
Right. Hey, does God tempt us?
Well,
would God tempt us?
Why would they think that?
Well, I don't know. Genesis 22:1 says, sometime later, God tested Abraham. So God tempted Abraham, okay? James 1:13 says, however, when tempted, no one should say, God is tempting me. For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he tempt anyone.
So
God does not tempt anyone. What is it?
Well, that's a legitimate Bible contradiction. Let's just end the show.
All right.
It's show's over. No, just kidding. Okay.
Oh,
so
no.
We're going to join this new atheist group.
I was so looking forward to...
Sorry, Tom, interview's over. all right. The cracked acronym that we use, we're going to use two letters to solve this. Okay. First of all, the D stands for dialect. We have to understand what type of language they're using when they say these words. Sometimes people use hyperbole. Sometimes they use metonyms. Sometimes they use analogies. And what are they using here when they say that sometime later God tested Abraham? Well, first of all, a test is vastly different than a temptation.
Right.
My math teacher gave me tests all the time.
But he never tempted you?
Never once did he tempt me. Well, he tempted me to hurt him. That's what he tempted me to do. And I wasn't a pacifist back then. Anyway, so there's a vast difference between test and tempt.
Right.
You have to understand the type of language they're using here. It does not say that God tempted Abraham, but that he asked him to go through this testing period to see what he was going to do. Now, in James 1, we want the context, because it does say God never tempts anyone. But you continue to read. You read the context, because our first C in cracked is for context. You continue to read, and it says, each person is tempted when, and here's the big thing, when they are dragged away by their own evil desire and right. enticed. You cannot really be tempted by God, yeah. even if he places you in the middle of something that you would want that's wrong, because it's not God that tempts. It's your own desire that causes those temptations.
Right. And throughout the Bible, it talks about how God sifts us
yeah.
to, you know, make sure, you know, the good rises to the top, or to get rid of the chaff and stuff yeah. like that. So, you know.
That's right. You know, I'm not addicted to cocaine.
Thank goodness for that.
You're not anymore.
What? Never was.
Oh, boy.
And you could put a big pile of cocaine right in front of me, and that would not be a temptation
right.
at all.
Right.
But to someone who struggled with that, oh, that yeah. would be a temptation. Why? Because the desire inside of them right. is enticed.
The flesh.
It's not that object itself. It's not God who was tempting Abraham, if there was any temptation there at all, because I don't actually think he was right. tempted. He wasn't going to do anything wrong or sinful. He was going to obey God, which wasn't a sin. So anyway, you got to understand the dialect. You got to understand the context. And this shows how this is not a contradiction, but two verses that just easily go hand in hand.
Bible contradiction.
You know, I was really worried that we weren't going to get through that one.
Yeah, every week, man, you start to sweat.
Right.
And I'm kind of tired of it.
One of the things, by the way, that yeah. came through in our work for The True Reason, the irrationality, the new atheism, is how often you can come up with a technically identifiable logical fallacy.
Mm.
And the one that showed up there was a fallacy called equivocation,
yes.
where you take a word that means one thing in one place and a similar or the same word that means another thing in another place, and yeah. you try to make them mean the same thing, or you try to treat them as if they mean right. the same thing, rather. And mm-hmm. and so you call a contradiction when you're actually talking about things that aren't the same and aren't meant to be the
right.
same.
It's almost like some of these guys don't really know how to talk.
So it's just another mm-hmm. example, another illustration
right.
of the right. what I didn't get to explain earlier is that the irrationality of the new atheism is that they don't do a good job of starting from some evidences or some premises and working through without tripping over some fallacy
yeah.
and working through to a sound conclusion.
And that's a big point, because logic plays a huge role, but these new atheists are so interested in harming Christianity that they're blind to their own faults of logic. You know, if I
right.
said to you that I don't like honey, but then I went home and I kissed my wife and said, I'm home, honey. I love you.
Oh, no.
Nobody, no rational person would say, that's a contradiction.
Oh.
Because you said you don't love honey, but now you said you love honey. No, but if that was in the Bible, these atheists would be screaming contradiction.
Well, I totally thought that's what you meant.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. And so what rationality means to atheists, if you study their literature, more often than not, and I mean a lot more often than not, rationality for them means that agreeing with their perspective mm-hmm. that you can't come to any conclusion unless it's empirically, scientifically observable, based on that kind of a thing. And so basically, it's like, if you think that there's something in the world that isn't scientifically studyable, then you're wrong. Which is the same way of saying that rationality is proved by the conclusion you come to.
So do Dawkins and Hitchens assume that everything is accomplished by naturalistic means? Or do they believe...
Yes.
Okay, they are. They're completely metaphysical naturalists.
As far as I can tell, they don't come out in as clearly on that as some people do, but I think it's pretty clear, yes.
And see, I wonder how someone can even get there. You know, I was at a seminar with J.P. Moreland one time, and if you guys don't know who J.P. Moreland is, he's an awesome philosopher. And he just asked the question, what is a thought? I want you to touch it. It's more than electrons firing in your brain. You know, it's an
sure.
immaterial object.
Right. Yep.
Being a metaphysical naturalist is just completely ridiculous, because we know these things every yeah. single day.
And the crazy thing is if two people share a thought, that even takes it more out of the realm of physicality.
Oh, we're bumping
right.
up to the end of the show. Tom, do you have like an extra 5 or 10 minutes so we could hang out and talk online only?
Oh, sure. Okay. Yeah, we can do that.
So, right. So guys, get over to truthrevolution.tv. We're going to talk just a little bit extra here with Tom Gilson. You got to get over to his website, thinkingchristian.net, and we're going to link to him, truthrevolution.tv. You also get over to truthrevolution.tv to hear the rest of this interview. Got a few more questions from atheists from that website that I'm going to throw at him, and I'm just looking forward to it. So,
all right.
Revolution Church.
Yep. 9 o'clock and 11:15 every Sunday.
Every Sunday. You can watch live online if you can't make it in person, but if you can make it in person, that's even better. I promise not to give you a hug until I know you.
Just don't sit in the front row. You might get wet, or you might get something thrown on you.
All right. TruthRevolution.tv. Check out Revolution Church, guys.
Truth Revolution.
And we're online now.
You might get wet. That's true.
Yeah. I mean, the other day, he just totally turned a cup upside down. Well, and I sit in the front row.
I was making an analogy.
He was.
Did you get wet?
I did get wet.
I think a couple.
Just
I think,
a little bit. There was a couple. I had brought a couple.
Was this baptism by sprinkling?
I had actually brought a couple of guests from out of state with me, and I didn't warn them. Of course, to me, this is normal behavior, and so I don't ever think about it. And so when he did that, they were like, oh, what's going on? And then,
well, I was trying to make the point that sometimes we use the things God gives us for purposes other than what he intended. Mm-hmm. And so I asked a guy to get me a glass of water, and he brought it to me, and I dumped it out. Right. I was just trying to show how ridiculous it is to waste the resources people give you. And, we should probably put a sign up in the front of the church that says, warning, if you're in the first two rows, you may get baptized.
No. Let's not put that sign up, because I think it's awesome when people get that for the first time.
I think the best one was when I started a weed whacker in the sanctuary, uh-huh. and I didn't think about it ahead of time. The whole place filled up with like exhaust.
Yes.
I shouldn't be advertising this online.
Yeah, or when you had the four-wheeler on stage.
Oh, okay. That We're just going to move on. All right. We got back onto our church here. All right. So, Tom, back here.
Yes.
You wrote this thing, and I just want to quote it and then get some extra thoughts for you. You said, the second part of the book's main thesis was that Christianity is consistent with true reason. Now, right. What were you trying to get at by true reason?
Well, it's a contrast with what the atheists claim as being the party of reason. And I don't want to say that we're the party of reason in that way, because it's not the banner we wave over ourselves. It's part of what's true about Christianity, but there's a lot more to it than just the brain. Mm. There's the heart. There's a relationship. There's what God does for us. But it's consistent with good thinking, in the sense that if you think well, you can think you can think well and think Christianly at the same time.
Mm, that's good. That's really good. Now, one of the questions and challenges that actually it looks like a number of these atheists pointed out to you in response to the book was mm-hmm. that the Chinese invented gunpowder. And so you were suggesting that Christians did the main work in science, but you got the Chinese doing things like gunpowder. What do you say to that?
Well, The Chinese, you'll find instances of technology popping up in different places. You'll find instances, for example, also of the Muslims making a lot of important advances in especially mathematics. And the difference that Christianity made, the difference that happened in Europe was it went beneath the here's what happens to the question of why does it happen? Is this consistent? What's going on here? And then also Christianity did more in Europe in particular, under its Christian influence, did more with developing the use of its findings.
So China had gunpowder, mm-hmm. but what did they do with it?
Well, for the most part, I'm not a China history expert, but I'm told that they didn't do much with it in terms of practical uses other than fireworks. They may have done some. Someone online said they built cannons. I don't think that's likely to be true. Someone could challenge me. I could be wrong on that. But they didn't certainly develop... I'm not bragging on Christianity here, but they didn't develop warfare of the same sort that the Europeans did.
Right. Which is kind of ironic, actually.
Right. that's the hard part of it. But it's not about war. It's about what you do with what you learn.
Usefulness.
And there are pluses and minuses. One of the beauties of learning church history is that you discover that God can use really failed people.
Amen.
And so there's hope for me too.
That's good. And so we're not saying that science can't take place or didn't take place in any other cultures, but rather that the foundation of Christianity provided a bedrock that helped, that really made a fertile soil for science so that it advanced in ways that it didn't advance in other cultures much, much more. Would you say that's an accurate statement?
Okay. Yeah. And it's not to deny what happened in other cultures. You know, again, I'm going to reemphasize that even though it's already been said, but that it just kept going deeper, broader, higher, longer in Europe, which is plausibly, and I think likely, attributable to Christianity.
Yeah. Now, one of the other challengers here on the forum said, for 1,400 years, Christianity had the luxury of being able to edit its scripture to harmonize its dogma. Gutenberg etched it into stone so that now modern Christians must contend with a text that grows stubbornly more and more antiquated.
Right.
So what would you respond to that with?
Well, the same person, I'm looking at it now, wrote that what we're trying to do now is protect the aging religious texts from revision, regardless of new or better evidence. He was contradicting himself, basically saying, you know, for a while we were editing everything. Now we're protecting everything from being edited, regardless of new or better evidence. Look, the evidence is really, really clear that the text that we use, the Bible, is the original.
Yeah.
Right. It is, there are variants or variations that amount to spelling errors or spelling variations, or in a few places, there are some genuinely questionable texts.
Mm-hmm.
But those few places are footnoted in every Bible I've ever owned.
Yes. That's absolutely
going back
right.
to when I was in third grade, and I'm getting kind of old now. this goes back to the 60s, and it probably went back for decades before that, but I can't speak for that. But nobody's hiding these things.
Mm-hmm. Right.
This is not a secret. This is not like some lost, hidden Christianity. Right. It's not that.
Well, as we've pointed out on other shows before, I mean, the evidence as far as manuscript evidence, when you compare it to other ancient writings, the Bible's off the charts when it comes to early manuscripts.
Oh, yeah. When you just the Greek New Testaments alone, we've got over 5,790 copies.
Right.
I mean, that's amazing. You compare that to Homer's Iliad, that right now I think it's sitting at 1,757 copies.
Right, but nobody questions anything about
Homer's Iliad.
Yeah, whether it's the same as it used to be.
Right. Well, and the time gap between Homer's Iliad's manuscripts and the original is 400 years.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these atheists pretend like there's this huge gap between the earliest writings and the copies of Christian scripture, but that's not true. There's a 40-year gap.
Right.
A 40-year gap.
Between the earliest.
Yeah.
And there's rumors of an even earlier one out there that I'm eagerly waiting to hear get reported on in some journal.
I've heard about this.
Supposedly this year.
I've heard about this. I heard the guy who owns
rumors.
It actually is asking a huge price so that it's hard to get studied. But it's
just going to be another piece of evidence that is used to basically give a foundation to our faith even more.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
So,
yeah.
All right. So if someone wanted a 10-second synopsis of your book here, how would you sum that up, Tom?
The book is about the irrationality of the new atheism, that they don't perform it very well in spite of their claims to be the party of reason. And on the flip side of that, that Christianity has a solid claim to be the place to find true reason.
Awesome. There you have it, guys. Tom Gilson from Ratio Christi. And his new book, True Reason, Confronting the Irrationality of the New Atheism.
Right. Get on over to his website.
Which is thinkingchristian.net.
Or you can get on over to Amazon, and we'll link from the site.
That's right. So. TruthRevolution.tv is going to have every link you could ever want.
To anywhere.
You don't want anything else other than this book right now. That's all you want. So, all right, get on
and
over there.
And by the way, throw in ratiochristi.org, ratiochristi.org.
Yes, and you know what?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit, just a little bit more. We've had the president of Ratio Christi there, but why don't you tell us just a little bit for the people who didn't hear what that organization's all about?
Okay, good. We are a Student Apologetics Alliance. Apologetics meaning the defense of the truth of Christianity. We're on 100 and more college campuses around the country, also involved in helping with youth on their way to college, going international. And we are there to equip and to help get students engaged in sharing their faith with confidence in its truth.
You always hear the rumors, but is it true that students have a hard time holding on to their faith through college?
That's more complicated. How long do we have?
Take whatever you need.
Students have a hard time holding on to their faith when they leave home. They actually, some of the research is coming in now that they do better in college than they do if they don't go to college, which is probably because of good student fellowships like ours and all the other bigger and longer established ones like Crew and IV and Navigators. But college is a... tends to be an anti-Christian environment, yes.
That is, and we see that on a regular basis. Right. A lot of this higher learning, and I'm not against it. I mean, I have a master's degree. I think a lot of people, I mean, they want to continue their education is a great thing. But a lot of higher education, really people pushing actually the new atheism in a sense.
Right. Or, and a lot of it's really subtle too, and it's just, it's not like they're pushing it, but it's just kind of an atmosphere of that's not terribly important, or let's not talk about that. And some of it's, I don't want to be taken as overstating my case, because I'll get in trouble for that if it's not true. But the statistics and the experience and the look in the courts and so on are pretty clear that the campus environment is not the friendliest place in the world for Christianity.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, we actually had a guest on not too long ago who was talking about the anti-Christian bias in higher education. And he had done some studies and found that if you are an evangelical Christian, you are less likely to get hired than virtually any other category if they were to find out that you're an evangelical Christian. I just found this to be astounding. All right. So, Rod, if someone was a college student and they wanted to get involved in your ministry, what do they need to do?
Best thing to do is go to our website. We have a map showing where we are located, and we have ways there to contact us if you want to get something started on your campus. The website is Ratio, spelled like the word ratio, Christi, Christ, and with an I on the end. So it's Latin for the reason of Christ. Okay. RatioChristi.org.
And we'll link that from the website.
Yeah. And if someone wasn't a student, but they were interested in supporting or getting involved, what would they do?
Same answer. Come find us on the web. That's the easiest way.
Okay, awesome. So thank you so much for being here today, taking up part of your day, a good chunk of your day, to just get word out about your book and sharing that information with us. So it's been a lot of fun. All right.
Thanks.
Everybody, this has been a great time. Tom Gilson, check out his book. Get over our website, truthrevolution.tv. Get over Ratio Christi's website and check them out. If you're going to college, if you know someone going to college, if you've never want to set foot on a college again, but because you had a bad experience, you need to help other people who are going to college, whatever it is, get over there. So have a great time, guys. Check that out. And we will see you here next week. Get over to truthrevolution.tv in the meantime and check out our Truth Shots, 60 Seconds of Truth, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.